in the year 2013, a ragtag group of rebels joined together in the wasteland of the internet. In the destruction of a previous site, they found themselves bind together by brotherhood, loyalty, and honor. To review every last film that comes out, this is Digital Noise.
Awesome.
That was how we're going to start everything.
That literally could not have been better if we had scripted it.
I'm now going to start saying that before I have sex with my girlfriend every time.
And also go...
yes, we've returned with the second part of
we
the
We told
first...
you we'd be back.
And
right?
Yeah, bitches. You can't keep us down. We are sort of like that Terminator robot.
Come with us if you want to watch good movies.
That's true. Yeah. Absolutely. So yes, this is the second installment of the first episode. Who knows? It's more of the same. It's more of the greatness. And we are covering, once
the
again...
The greatness that is now called Digital Noise.
Digital Noise.
Digital Noise.
With a Z?
With a Z.
Okay.
Yeah.
Digital Noise.
Z.
Bros.
D-N. It's D-N without the other D, if that helps you remember it at all.
No, I already forgot what we were talking about. Actually.
Okay.
Dairy Queen?
Yes, absolutely. Ooh. Well, we're finishing up the releases from the last few weeks when we were unavoidably detained. You know,
by
we were
whiskey.
Unable by a lot of things and unable to review some of this stuff. And we're just going to run down the last of what we consider the best, most interesting, most discussion-worthy releases of the last few weeks.
But first, I actually have a question from a fan.
What?
Yeah, they don't actually exist yet. But this is their question they read out. John C. John of Anywhereville, California.
Oh, it's lovely there.
Why are you guys so awesome? You're amazing. Every word you say spills off your silver tongues like they were the gold that Rumpelstiltskin put together on his wheel. How do you do it? What makes you so special?
Booze.
Yeah.
I would imagine.
Wait, that was the answer.
I feel like this wasn't a real question.
No, of course totally. It was a real question.
It is a totally real, now don't worry about it, shut up question.
Why didn't we sing the song?
Oh, we didn't sing the song. Well, I think we're still in sort of...
I want to sing the song!
Alright, well, we'll sing the song.
Alright.
Viewer mail! Viewer mail! Viewer mail!
Thank you.
After the
thank you for acquiescing to the requests of
after
a petulant child.
Your male apocalypse, three men rose out of the ashes.
Yeah, I'm
to answer that question.
To answer just that question. Now we're going to go back to the ashes because it's warmer there.
It's yeah. Whiskey.
It is whiskey.
Yeah, that's the end. All right, so now we've gotten that play stopper out of the way.
Now we're going to run through a smattering of Disney releases from the last few weeks, starting with Lilo and Stitch.
I love this movie.
This is a lot of fun, this movie.
I do. It's like, and some of the latter day, pre-Pixar releases were not, you know, all that. They're of mixed quality, and certainly...
They sucked ass.
I wouldn't even go that far. This three-pack we're going to talk about, they all have certain things about them that are good, but Lilo and Stitch is the one that's just flat-out great.
And it has, if nothing else, one of my favorite Disney posters of all time, where literally these characters from Disney canon all over the place are just running in terror from this tiny, adorable blue monster. It's such a great poster because it's literally like, oh, this might be the craziest, most dangerous character we've ever created.
Well, and part of the original advertising for this, if you remember, is them actually doing little animated bits where it was like a scene from one of the classic Disney films, and then Stitch, this little monster, coming in and like disrupting the whole scene. They're like, ah!
I don't remember that, but that's amazing.
Yeah, you don't remember that?
I don't.
Okay. Well, anyway, all that stuff here on this, because this is a two-movie collection of this and the, you know, the direct-to-DVD sequel, which is all these have a direct-to-DVD sequel, and none of them are really all that great, as you might expect.
This is a weird trend for... I mean, I understand it from a business standpoint, but as a viewer and as a collector of media,
yeah,
I'm not a big fan of this trend.
No, I'm not terribly either. But that being said, and this is the... All right, so this is the worst example yet of it, because at least in the past, the special edition from the previous set, they've put it into HD, they put it on Blu-ray. This is the first time ever that with a set... It's just the Blu-ray of the film with not even the commentary on it.
Wow.
And then the DVD edition with all the extras on the DVD edition.
So wait, so it's a Blu-ray of Lilo and Stitch with no special features.
And then a DVD with the special features that were previously released.
That's really weird.
Yeah, I know. So you can't, if you want to watch the commentary on the Blu-ray, you can't do it. It's not there.
That's so bizarre.
It was bad planning. But that being said, those and others of the extra features are involved in this. The story, of course, is Stitch, who is a genetically created monster space warrior of a cute cuddly teddy bear with weird shit hanging off of him, who manages to escape from his judgment on another planet and come to Earth, where he meets a Hawaiian family with a little girl who's kind of like dealing with a sort of I feel like a monster myself, nobody likes me sort of thing.
Yeah.
And bonds with this creature who reluctantly sort of starts to see the appeal of having a family. And
he's the furry version of a crippling computer virus. He was created to cause havoc, and that's it. That's all he knows how to do.
Yeah, and yet this is about him learning to be more than that. And it's also about the little girl, about finding her place in the world as well, where she's like, you know, she's a little kid who's troubled. She's the kid who bites people, you know? Yeah. She's one of those kids, and it's about her finally finding, you know, breaking her way out of that, finding out about her identity. And on the charm level, this is right among some of the greatest of the Disney cartoons.
Oh, yeah, it's got oodles of charm, and I don't use the word oodles very often.
No.
One of the fun things about watching any Disney movie throughout the history of that studio is that these movies are also as much about the region that they choose to explore within the story than they are about the story themselves. And this is one where it's like, oh, Hawaii, they've never really done a feature that has explored the culture of Hawaii. So I enjoyed that about it as well.
Have you ever been to Hawaii?
No.
Me neither.
It's a good story.
Any fans in Hawaii who have a lot of money who want to send us for a special remote viewing appearance in Hawaii? God damn
it. You did it again. That's another shot.
Digital
goddamn noise.
I'm sorry. I'll get used to it eventually. I'm still not used to you calling me Chris on the air.
Yeah, so. No, that is really strange.
That's
all I know about Hawaii comes from Elvis movies and episodes of Dog the Bounty Hunter. So, I mean...
And you know, volcano films.
And volcano movies, yeah.
But, yeah, I want to go. So just as long as that's out there.
Yeah.
So
never let's do it. Let's go.
Yeah, let's go.
Let's stop recording right now and just go to Hawaii.
No, because a fan has to listen to this first. This mysterious fan who has millions of dollars and lives in Hawaii and says, I would love to party with the guys from Digital.
The Phantom Patron?
Yeah, the Phantom Patron.
Mm, we'll find him.
Because God knows we can't afford it on our own.
That's true.
Anyway, yeah, this is a terrific movie. It looks great. I'm always surprised when people don't think this is one of their best. I really do. It's one of the better latter-day Disney films. Now, I'm going to switch it out for, I think, one of the ones that's not so good is Atlantis, The Lost Empire.
This is one of the few Disney movies I haven't seen.
Now, I hadn't seen this when it originally came out. It's one of the only ones I think I didn't see on original release. And this came out in 2001. One of the interesting things about this is that they got the guy who does Hellboy, Mike Mignola, to come up with a lot of the animation and character design of this.
Really?
Yeah, which a lot of people were super excited about this coming out for that reason. He's a terrific and innovative artist. The other thing about this is actually the first sci-fi Disney animated feature. First one they ever did.
Huh.
Isn't that bizarre?
That is bizarre.
Yeah.
I guess I never thought about that.
The 41st animated film and the first sci-fi one that they did. And the idea of...
Treasure Planet was after this?
Yes, it was. Okay. And is awful for the
movie. Oh, no, it's terrible.
Yeah. But Atlantis, The Lost Empire is not awful. It's just troubled. It never quite all gels together. But there is a lot of good stuff here. I mean, not the least of which is the lead character, which is like a nerdy Indiana Jones.
Isn't he voiced by Michael J. Fox?
Michael J. Fox, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not shaky performance at all. He does a great job here playing this character who's Then were we just going to skip right past that? Okay.
Brian was a little busy at the moment, and I was too offended to speak.
Did you call him shaky?
I did.
Oh, God damn it.
All right. But, you know, where who's like...
You fucking called him
who's
shaky,
found evidence that Atlantis really exists, and of course he finds a rich benefactor who says, okay, well, I'm going to pay for a trip for you to go and find this place in a big voyage, 20,000 leagues under the sea.
The Phantom Patron.
The Phantom
Patron. He's got his own Phantom
Patron. He totally does. Man, I like that term. I'm going to use that more. voiced by James Garner is the voice of the captain.
Oh, nice.
Well, not the guy, the patron, the guy who's the captain of the ship.
Oh, okay.
Badass guy. He's like, yeah, come on, we're going to do all this. Jim Varney, actually, his last role was a voice in this as well.
Oh, wow.
But they go down, they find Atlantis. Our hero falls in love. Shit goes terribly wrong. Ultimately, it's kind of a screed against, like, wild capitalism, believe it or not. But it's not bad. Visually, it's really neat. Story-wise, it could have used some more humor, quite frankly. And, you know, I haven't even watched the second part of this. The direct-to-DVD one. I mean, Disney was so proud of this before it came out. They were like, they had started prepping a TV series to continue right where it left out. And it didn't make its money back, I don't think. Or at least it wasn't even close to what it should have been. And they went, oops, no. And so that got abandoned. I have a feeling pieces of that ended up being what the second movie is. But
yeah, how is that second movie? Did you get a chance to look at that?
No, I did not. But yeah, there's a making of on here, 63 minutes, deleted scenes.
I'm just going to go out on a limb and say that second movie sucks ass. Well, yeah,
the one side I'm looking at gives it a 1 out of 5.
Wow.
Yeah, so I don't know.
That's not a great review.
Not a great review. But like I said, it's not bad, this movie. It's for people who like steampunky type stuff, that steampunk sci-fi. You're going to like it. But ultimately, it's not one of the more memorable ones. Now, the third of this collection is a film that I do really like, even though it's incredibly flawed, no question. But it's so goddamn funny that who gives a shit?
Yeah.
It's The Emperor's New Groove.
And once again, the regionality of, you know, the story and what's going on. This is in Peru, I believe, is where this takes place. Like,
yeah, I believe
ancient
so.
Peru. Which, again, is a place that they have not done a lot of stories, Disney.
Stuff happened, and Disney wasn't there.
But and this is the story of a very spoiled brat emperor, voiced by David Spade, which is very fitting, who just wants to get his way all the time. He wants this local farmer to move his entire village so he can build a water park, which is funny considering it's ancient Peru.
Local farmer, voiced by John Goodman.
Yes, who is, you know, as we all know, has a great voice for animation.
Yeah.
And he is... Basically, there's a witch who wants to take over the throne. So
Eartha Kitt.
Voiced immensely well by Eartha Kitt, who turns him into, or who tries to kill him, but her bumbling sidekick, Krunk, who is every bit the reason to watch this movie.
Highlight of this film.
Krunk is the greatest part about this film.
Patrick Warburton.
By the incomparable Patrick Warburton. I'm Krunk. In my defense, your poisons all do look alike.
It's funny. I used to think that, like, Bo did a flawless Patrick Warburton until I met you. And now I'm like, I saw you two back and forth, and even Bo was embarrassed.
Oh, well, that's unfortunate. But that's really, to me, the best part of this movie is just watching Krunk go from, like, this villainous sidekick who's still kind of... You see the good in him. And then by the end of the movie, it's like, I just want to give this guy a hug. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. No, he's like, he's dumb, but sweet. And he just kind of got in that position where it was a job, and he's working for this person who's the advisor to the king. Hey, it's a good job. And it takes a while for it to dawn on him, hey, maybe this is wrong.
It's sort of like that scene in The Muppets where the bear goes, you think we're working for the bad guy? It's literally like that. And he mixes up the poison, so instead of killing the emperor, he turns him into a llama and tries to get rid of the evidence of his failure. And the llama ends up in the village, you know, and John Goodman, and they have this...
It's a road trip movie with John Goodman and David Spade, with David Spade as a complete self-centered dick. John Goodman as the nicest guy imaginable, but who, despite the fact that this emperor, he knows he's the emperor, is going to destroy his village, is still reluctantly trying to help him get back to his castle to regain his humanhood.
Yeah.
And it's about David Spade learning what's actually important in life, not just... I mean, the poster of this is a big picture of him as a human, and it just says, me!
There's a lot of great dialogue in this, too. I think that the snappy, kind of silly dialogue that works so well is... is sort of at the heart of what makes Emperor's New Groove a memorable Disney film.
Well, the oddest thing about this film is that it doesn't feel anything like a Disney film. It feels like a Looney Tunes film.
Oh, yeah.
All the humor is completely Looney Tunes sensibilities, which actually bugged a lot of critics at the time, but I was like, hey, it's actually kind of a pleasant change.
Hey, if it works for this story, then do it.
And it did.
Hey, if it works for this story, then nah.
I'm all for plagiarizing if it makes a better movie.
That is almost creepy. Beer!
Beer! Can I get a beer, please?
Oh, my God. We've got to bring Patrick Warburton on a show on the site at some point just so you two can talk back and forth the whole time like that.
I'll be Kronk, and he'll be fucking his character from Venture Brothers.
Archer.
No. His character.
Or not Archer. Shut. Brock.
Brock Samson.
Archer? What?
I don't know. I don't know why I blanked.
Oh, I forgot to mention, there's a lot of fourth wall breaking in this, which is weird for a Disney film, but it works. It's actually really, really funny with David Spade occasionally coming in as the llama going like, oh, this is bullshit. Don't pay any attention.
The weirdest part is when Kevin Spacey comes out and breaks the fourth wall, considering he's not even in the movie. He just like starts talking to the camera about all these political machinations. It's like, I don't understand why you're here.
Are you still...
see, I'm with you guys. I think this movie is great. And I'm really excited to hear if either of you have seen the sequel.
I have.
No. Okay. Good? Because it's all like Kronk based, which makes me think that it should be good.
I got 3/4 of the way through it and went, a little Kronk goes a long way.
Oh, sad.
See, I remember seeing it. Now, to be fair, I saw it when I worked at a video store in college, and it was something that, you know, you put on the shelf for people to rent.
Yeah.
But I was like, okay, that's fine. That's enjoyable. And okay. Yeah, but you're right. I mean, like, Kronk is best served by having a limited screen time, just because it makes every appearance of him on screen so much more special.
It's better than most of the direct-to-DVD sequels.
I would agree with that.
And the visual quality of it is actually excellent.
Yeah.
Much more so than a lot of them. But this, like I said, it's like one of those things where it's a bunch of different stories that they found a wraparound plot for, and there's a point that you're like, okay, this is enough, quite frankly. This is a character that's kind of simple-minded, but he's very funny when he's used minimally, but trying to make him the central focus just gets old after a while.
To be fair, I would watch a video about do-it-yourself circumcision if Patrick Warburton was the narrator. So, you know what? There's at least a little bit of appeal in Kronk's New Groove and the fact that it is Patrick Warburton doing it the entire time.
Let's hear that video.
So what you're going to want to do is take a good, strong grip of the foreskin. Make sure your scalpel is nice and sharp. Don't want to get tetanus. And then cut it. And it's
called that Briss Weekly.
Briss Weekly.
All
it's,
right.
It's going to hurt like hell.
Let's not put that image in our head.
So that is sort of the Disney roundup for this particular show.
Aren't we getting at pretty much the end of the Disney animated releases to come out on Blu-ray? I mean, are there
still
any?
Still Aladdin.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. They still put out Aladdin.
Yeah. Aladdin, which is out currently on Blu-ray in almost every other country in the world.
All right. I feel like I have to say this to that. What the fuck?
No, I don't know. Yeah. It came out like a month ago, and it was supposed to come out. Like, Disney had it scheduled to come out in the States at the same time, and they pushed it back like a year. Like, it's not coming out until late next year now, I think.
One of my very favorite Disney films.
But it just came out in June in, like, the UK and Australia and Germany. And several other European countries now have Aladdin on Blu-ray.
Maybe the last truly great Robin Williams playing a funny character movie.
Possibly.
Hey, Disney, we want to see fucking Aladdin.
All I have to say is they better be doing some spectacular shit for the U.S. release.
Yeah, I mean,
this is gay. Put it on Blu-ray. Fucking seriously.
I want them, the UPS guy, to deliver it on a flying carpet.
Yeah, that's where we're at now, Disney.
And I want
flying carpets for everyone.
I want you to open the package and just go, a whole new world.
Don't you dare close your eyes.
I'm not the
A million one. Pixels shining blue. Yeah, no, that would be great.
I'm into it. Bring it. I want to see it. I want to put it inside my non-existent vagina.
I want to put it in my brain's vagina.
brain vagina.
Too. I like
that. We're also getting The Little Mermaid later this year, which is another one of those holdouts.
Speaking of missing vaginas.
Have you seen...
Hi-yo.
Have you seen the YouTube thing with that's all like Disney characters' heads exploding?
Yes. It's not just Disney characters. It's just movie characters.
Well, no, the one I saw was just a collection of great song moments
recuts.
Where they're like, oh,
and she
and
like
then their
was
head
on the rock and the
up.
Waves break and their head explodes.
And then in the scene, she like kind of
bastards.
Slides down the rocks into the water backwards. So for in the sequence of like she's done her head. It's like, yeah, that does look like she just died and her body's slipping
you
back.
Disrespectful
into the water.
Fucks.
I love it.
Well, from the Disney corner, we move on to the Criterion release of this particular show. Excuse me, and that is Safety Last, a 1923 film starring the great Harold Lloyd.
Oh, I love Harold Lloyd. Why didn't I ask for this? What's wrong with you, Chris?
Well, I think it was one of those things. There was a lot going on at the time of this particular month of releases. Because I will say this for Criterion, they were very accommodating. I was like, I know this is coming out tomorrow, and I completely blanked on requesting something from you guys. But we always review Criterion Blu-rays. Like that's just we always want to have something. And whatever you guys have lying around. And they were like, oh, we still have Safety Last. And I was just like, fuck yes!
That was the one you actually wanted.
Yes, that was the one I absolutely wanted. Because this is a movie that I had never seen. However, it is has one of the most iconic scenes in film history. And that is the scene where Harold Lloyd is suspended from this building and kind of holding on to a collapsing clock for dear life. And it's been parodied in so many. In fact, Futurama had a whole episode where Zoidberg's famous uncle was Harold Zoid, and he was an old silent comedy star, and it was just like a complete parody of what's going on
here.
That
being said, Charlie Chaplin did his own very famous scene of hanging from a clock as well.
Well, there was a lot of, and in fact, one of the great, okay, so Safety Last is a very basic story. It's a very typical story for this era in film, which is that it's a poor boy goes to the city, wants to make good to impress a girl. It's like, literally, there's 1,000 movies made in this era that are exactly like that.
Harold's just a poor boy impressing a young girl.
Hanging from a clock, hoping that he doesn't fall down.
He's gonna make a great movie.
This is why nobody pays us to do parody songs.
Nope.
We're
like lame Al.
We are lame Al.
Yeah.
That was my interest in this movie, is just understanding, you know, from a historical context, you know, what's going on in cinema. This is a really, like I said, an iconic moment. And Harold Lloyd, they talk about this in the special features, started his career by imitating Charlie Chaplin.
Sure.
To the point that he had the same mustache, but it was split in two. So, see, it's not the same. And Chaplin wore loose clothes, so I'll wear really tight clothes. And it wasn't really until he started understanding what made Chaplin's, because at first he was playing a character that was very abrasive and very rude and very physically like a bully.
Yeah.
And then he started looking at what made Chaplin so lovable and decided, no, I'm going to do something different and kind of revamp the character. And it became sort of the quintessential Harold Lloyd character that you see in Safety Last, which is a really interesting story. Safety Last itself is another one of those things that's just like watching a Buster Keaton movie. You just kind of marvel at the things they were able to pull off. And the physical comedy and the stunts. And one of my favorite scenes is he's on an overcrowded trolley car, like hanging onto a person who's hanging onto the outside. And then he like tries to jump onto a moving car and falls. And he like that's in the script. Like he's supposed to fall off of two moving vehicles and roll between them so he doesn't get run over. There's no special effect for that. He just did it.
Well, yeah, that was back in the day. I mean, like, what were you supposed to do? These were like the spectacle films of their day. There's no choice. There were a few camera tricks sometimes that people would use. Like, there was a Charlie Chaplin film where he keeps skating close to the edge of a huge precipice. Yes, there was an effect used for that to make that happen. But generally speaking, a lot of this is like, these guys just had fucking balls of brass.
And the best they had at the time, in a lot of ways, was speed ramping, where it's just they would make it look like it was going faster than it was. Yeah. But even still, it's like, these are two moving vehicles.
Yeah.
And if you mistime this by a second, you're dead.
I mean, Harold Lloyd is right up there with Buster Keaton, especially, and even much more so than Charlie Chaplin was, as one of the great early innovative stuntmen, came up with these huge mise-en-scene things to all built around a massive, incredibly dangerous stunt, you know, that were the Jackie Chan's big influence.
And not only that, but they talk about, again, on the special features, that there's some really great documentaries and great information to be found here on this Criterion release, as there often is, about how Harold Lloyd was actually a great influence on Buster Keaton. So it's like from Lloyd to Keaton, from Keaton to Jackie Chan. I mean, that cinematic legacy keeps getting handed down because now you have martial artists who got started watching Jackie Chan.
Where's the next guy, though?
Yeah, that's a very good question.
Yeah, because I watch almost anything that they'll send me that comes from Asian countries that involves martial arts or stunt work, and I find that like only the stuff from Indonesia and Thailand is anybody still doing their own stunts.
Well, that's the place, but I think Luke and I used to joke that that's the place where life is still very cheap.
Yeah,
I
mean, life is cheap there.
Maybe that's kind of part of it, why they can still do it. But when it gets to the point your movies are making so much money, they're like, yeah, we need to insure this movie, and you can't do that stunt.
But I think it's still impressive, and I think audiences are still receptive to it, and I think the way that you can point to that and show someone proof of that is with The Raid.
Yeah.
You know, I think The Raid is an amazing film that does so much more on a limited budget and using real stunt people and real, like, a lot of just basic stuff where, like, the guy will wear, like, you know, a padded vest.
So he can actually get kicked.
Yes. Yeah. So that they're real kicks. Like, they're not pulling their punches anymore because they don't have to.
There's no way they pulled their punches on that film.
No. No, they didn't. And there are a lot of, like, the director, Gareth Evans, has talked a lot about the way they went about that. And it's very old school, but it comes off so much better on film than, you know, a lot of the American action films that we get.
Special digital noise bonus feature. Watch The Raid.
Yeah, totally watch
The Raid.
Well,
and that's, I mean, that legacy, what we're seeing is in many ways owed to the stuff that we saw from Buster Keaton, from Harold Lloyd, and that's why I think it's so important to, and not only that, but in and of themselves, these movies a lot of times are wildly entertaining. I had a lot of fun with Safety Last. I thought it was not quite as good as perhaps, I think Sherlock Jr. is still my favorite of all of these.
Or and the General is fantastic.
The General, or the one where I always forget the name, but it's where him and his wife are trying to remodel a house in like 8 days. I can never remember.
Say it's just called Home.
It may just be called Home, but that one is...
Or Home Sweet Home.
Absolutely terrific. But again, that when you get to that clock scene, and one of the interesting things they talk about is that Harold Lloyd was one of these guys that's kind of like a magician. He never wanted to tell people how he did these tricks.
Yeah.
So they have an interview where he's like, oh, I was actually up there. And other historians coming in looking at the building going, that building he's on is not that high. There is no way he was just really up there.
Right. Well, that was actually kind of par for the course at the time. I mean, like, even looking back at, like, some of the very well-documented Charlie Chaplin stuff, because he was by far the bigger star at the time than these guys. I mean, still is, but, like, as far as regard goes. But he would go, like, no, we did it, that's what happened, and it wasn't till decades later that films, like, technicians examining this was like, no, look at that, this is fucking totally, yeah, you can see where they didn't do it.
Well, like magicians, people examining it. They didn't want people to steal their tricks.
Exactly, they didn't want people to steal their tricks, and they wanted to create the illusion, they felt it was important for the audience to keep the illusion of what was
Well, that's why they called them thrill pictures.
Yeah.
They didn't call them, like, this wasn't called a comedy back then, it was called a thrill picture.
Yeah.
Because it was like, oh my gosh, how is this person suspended from a clock high above the street and not dying? You know, and like, it was because there was this big interest at the time in the human fly thing where people would just climb buildings.
Yep.
Like, that was a big draw at the time. So Harold Lloyd saw that and went, okay, we're going to put that in a movie somehow.
Which reminds me, I still need to see Man on the Wire.
Yeah, I haven't seen Man on Wire either.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. I heard that's great.
And the guy just, another of the, one of the flying, Wallendez? One of the famous circus family.
Right.
One of their youngest members just...
Oh, the Graysons.
No, not the Graysons.
No?
You dick.
Hey-o.
See how that works? But one of that famous family just walked across this huge ravine. I don't think it was the Grand Canyon, but it was this huge ravine on a tightrope. So it was like, that just happened recently, so that made me think, man, I really need to see Man on Wire.
Yeah. But this is Criterion, so it comes with tons of bonus features.
Definitely.
It's obviously well worth your time to pick this up. I haven't even seen this, and I'm just looking at this list of stuff. I'm like, damn it, why didn't I ask for this?
Even the extra short films.
Stupid.
Even the extra short films look like they've taken time and cleaned them up. And they're just for bonus features. They're not even the main feature of the disc.
This is why I fail.
A lot of great stuff here. This there's a really great story about the score. The one you're hearing in the movie is from 1989 from a guy named Carl Davis. And they also have one, because the thing with these silent movies is that they're silent movies. So what you would have is you would have somebody in the theater playing on a piano or an organ the score for the movie. So over time, you know, because those two things aren't connected, you have a person in front and the movie itself, they can get lost.
Yeah.
And so we have a score from someone in 1989 kind of interpreting what the score for the movie was. And then there's also an alternate improvised score by a guy named... sorry.
Stop it.
Gaylord Carter.
That's a real name.
From 1969. So it's just, again, it's just an interesting little tidbit from film history that I find fascinating, personally.
Yeah. So you recommend this?
I highly, highly recommend Safety Last.
All right.
And moving on from there, we're going to talk about Enter the Dragon.
Oh, God. It's... so appropriate because poor Jim Kelly just died. Isn't that sad?
You have no idea how much that breaks my heart.
He was in his 60s.
As a big fan of Black Terminator, Black Belt Jones, Three the Hard Way, I mean, I love Jim Kelly, and I'm so upset.
And also, Bruce Lee's been dead for a while, so that sucks too.
Yes, that also sucks.
That
thank
does
you.
Suck. But you know, like Bruce Lee, of course, was arguably the greatest film martial artist of all time. I mean, I tend to be more of a Jackie Chan guy, but that being said, Chan was a stunt master. Lee was straight up like fighting.
And yeah, but I mean, Bruce Lee's name can't not be in the discussion.
Yeah.
Whether you agree to it or agree with it or not, that name is going to be in the discussion.
If you're
going to
do a top three list, there is no top three list that doesn't include Bruce Lee.
Absolutely not.
And these films were certainly the ones that brought martial arts to America's attention. Mm-hmm. I mean, God knows, I remember when Enter the Dragon came out originally, every kid in the world went, I want to sign up for karate. Even though this had nothing to do with karate. That was all you could take at that time in America.
I'll kick your ass
from here to Tiananmen Square. Oh, yeah, motherfucker. I'm going to kick your fucking dairy and yeah. All right, that's it.
You guys are gay.
What's wrong with that, Luke?
Nothing. I fully support your right to marry.
I'm sorry, but he tickles my brain vagina.
I fully support your right to marry.
Oh, Luke, I love you so much.
Wait, who's getting married?
Yeah, I don't know.
But no, this is Enter the Dragon. It's the second release on Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what? The real question is, what separates this from the original version?
Indeed, that
on
is
Blu-ray
the question.
Of this. Why do you need to double buy this? Well, admittedly, a lot of the reason is because of like just cool shit they put in the package, like solid stuff. Like there's a patch from like Bruce Lee. It's like, oh, you're part of the new like martial arts society. You can put that shit on your jacket. There's a bunch of like little hologram pictures and stuff. I mean, there's a stack of cool shit that comes in this. Usually there'll be one or two things like that are cool. This has like got a bunch of it. I'm like, I was like, if I didn't have this, I would have bought it because I love this fucking movie.
Whoa, what just happened? You went full Frank Oz on that shit.
Why did you just turn into a demon?
Because the demon in me loves Enter the Dragon. It's a great
and hates Inspector Gadget,
movie.
Apparently.
I'm so terrified.
You know
right
what's
now.
Sad to admit? I saw Fistful of Yen before I saw Enter the Dragon.
I don't even know what that is.
You ever seen Kentucky Fried Movie?
Yeah.
The Enter the Dragon parody on that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, is a Fistful of Yen.
Okay.
Yeah, I saw that first, and then years later, so Enter the Dragon went, oh, this was what Fistful of Yen was at. Did not know. But yeah, actually, there is some new stuff on here. There's a interview, vintage interviews with Bruce Lee that are added in and put into HD. There's a thing about like various martial artists talking about the art that like, you know, that Lee kind of invented. Really.
Jeet Kune Do.
Yeah, Jeet Kune Do. Mm-hmm. There's a tour of the Hong Kong hotspots. And then, of course, all the stuff that came on the previous edition here.
Not quite all. Unfortunately enough, if you'll note, there was a 100-minute documentary called "The Warrior's Journey" that was on the 2007 release.
Oh,
that doesn't appear on this one.
I didn't realize that.
For completionists, you may want to grab both. You can probably the 2001 release or the 2007. Oh, did you really?
I did.
Oh, son of a bitch!
Get it back. Get it back.
Yeah, get it back. It's a single disc release. You know, you can probably get it for $5 or $6 on Marketplace. So
yeah, this one, like I said, it's like it's mainly there though for the like. I mean, it's not obviously it's not the it should have had that. Why didn't it have that?
Why didn't it have that,
Luke? I don't know.
I'm upset.
Yeah, I
but
am
I have this
now.
Cool patch that I can put on my back.
Dude, when I open the set and show you the stuff that comes in this, you're going to be like, okay, I want this.
I'm already stealing it from you. I don't know why we're having this discussion.
Damn it. but yeah, regardless, this is such a great movie, and it is so well worth owning, and regardless of what version of it you have, it's the best. Come on, does anybody really have an opinion that any film by Bruce Lee other than this is the best Bruce Lee film?
It's really hard to argue. It's really hard to argue. And Jim Kelly, rest in peace, I will, in tribute, remind you all that the best line in this movie comes from Jim Kelly. Bullshit, Mr. Handman!
Take him to Detroit.
Well, that is the new Enter the Dragon Blu-ray. As we said, a lot of new stuff and missing one very vital extra feature.
Thanks a lot for ruining it.
I'm so sorry. I just wanted people to know.
I would have been happier if I never knew.
Yeah, so sorry. But the people who were reviewing this war probably wouldn't like it if we just started hiding things because we didn't want to know them.
Well, actually, they'd be very happy because they want people to buy this release and not the other.
No, I meant the people listening.
Oh, right.
Not the companies.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
The ones we actually
the ones
have
we give a shit about.
There you go. Those ones.
The audience members that we love and thank for their support of our fine show.
They're like our children. Hey, speaking of children.
Oh, Christ.
Let's talk about Come Out and Play.
Wait,
okay. It sounded like there was going to be like a
I mean, I guess we
there.
Can.
It's going to be. Are we going to talk about what's going on in the Texas Capitol right now? I don't know.
No, we're not.
Right. Oh, okay.
But speaking of creepy children.
Yes, indeed. Come Out and Play is actually a remake of a 1976 Spanish horror film called Who Can Kill a Child?
And is that what this is a remake of?
Yeah. Did you not know that?
No, I had no idea. I saw this at a Jason Murphy party like 3 years ago. Not this,
but yeah,
Who Can Kill a Child.
I saw, yeah. You know what? I saw Who Can Kill a Child at that same party. And it's a really disturbing film, not just because of what's happening in the film, but because of the effect.
The moral quandaries.
The moral that's a great way to put it. And the way that you approach those moral quandaries, because initially you're like, well, that's just... Well, if I was in that situation, I don't know that I could really say I would do something different. And that's when it has its hooks in you, when you have that thought even for a second. And the basic story is that you have a young couple who go to this island. I can't remember in this movie if it's still off the coast of Spain.
I don't think they ever really mention it. Like, they're definitely, like, on a honeymoon or a vacation of some sort.
Yeah.
And they're out in a little boat, and they come across this island, and they're just like, hey, we should stop.
It's clearly a European or a Mediterranean country that has an island chain associated with it. And they go to this island. They're told that it's, you know, just this great destination, and they want a little bit more privacy and isolation. They go out there, and there's supposed to be this big festival going on, but where are all the people? All they keep running into are kids. It's like, where is everybody? And then they realize why there are only children on the island, and shit gets real.
Well, when does Captain Kirk show up?
Captain Kirk does not show up, unfortunately. This was directed by a very weird dude named Makanov, who wears a mask all the time, and doesn't even reveal to his actors until most of the way through a shoot what he actually looks like. He's a very bizarre dude. And on this Blu-ray...
So he's like the Daft Punk of film,
yeah,
pretty
much.
Yeah,
like, he wants to be this big mystery dude, and he, like, released this little manifesto before the movie about, like, I don't know, breaking barriers in cinema. It was a bunch of bullshit, essentially. Yeah. It's just like, dude, just make your fucking movie.
I was
going to
say,
right?
It sounds kind of like bullshit.
It's such bullshit.
I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Luke, that he got started doing music videos. And
I think that's right.
I think it was just a way for him to kind of set himself apart from the other, you know, people who aren't getting a lot of credit for directing music videos because they're fucking music videos.
Which is true, yeah. But it doesn't stop him from being some old bullshit.
No, it is bullshit. But here's the thing. This movie captures a lot of not only the terror, but the ideological...
The moral conundrums.
The moral conundrums that came from the original film. And I find it to be a really faithful remake in that it captures that. It doesn't follow the plot exactly, but it's pretty damn close. And the actors here, both of them are just really, really talented. And the cinematography is gorgeous. I don't know who his DP was, but... He shot the hell out of this place. Like, this place, he does a great job of going back and forth between, oh my god, look how gorgeously naturally beautiful it is, and then, oh my god, look how sinister it is. It's these dark alleys and these crazed children, and then it's, oh, it's beautiful again. Like, going back and forth, transitioning, it's very interesting the way he does that.
Now, let's be clear. This is a horror film.
Yes.
And some of the accusations of this film of not being good came from people that I could have said the exact same thing about Who Can Kill a Child, was that it takes forever for anything to actually happen in this film. Like, it's very slow building to get to the point.
That may be fine, but I don't understand why that's inherently a bad thing.
Well, I'm not saying...
No, I know you're not saying
I'm more
that,
saying it like a warning to people who are expecting something a little more lurid.
Yeah.
I mean, the film starts with them getting off the boat, and immediately you know there's, like, it doesn't take long for you to realize that there's no one around.
Warning bells are set off as soon as they step off the boat.
Right, so, I mean, yeah, I guess it does take a little while for something to happen, quote-unquote, but there's definitely an atmosphere being built, and I think, you know, any fan of cinema who's watched, you know, more than just the Avengers will be just fine. Like,
I think if you're here's what I'll say. I think if you're a fan of House of the Devil, Sure. You understand this type of pacing.
I really liked House of the Devil.
Where it's, you know, they tell you.
But I don't even think it's that slow.
No, it's not that slow, but it's another situation where they give you all the clues you need to know that something is really fucking wrong here and these people need to leave, but they take their time and methodically, like, let them get deeper and deeper into this place and you're just like, get out.
William Shatner being there?
Yes, by William. You just want William Shatner to be in this
movie.
Sabotage. So,
I wish I could remember the name of that episode, but god damn it.
I can't either.
You remember what I'm talking about?
I no idea. This, not even the slightest clue.
Yeah.
Planet
was
of
it
teenagers.
In Star Wars?
No, it was not in Star Wars.
All right, then how do I turn Luke's mic off?
So, here's what I will say as far as the special features go. Don't expect to see Makinoff in any of them. Because he's not going to turn up. So
did you look at the special feature?
I did, because I wanted to see what he looked like.
Does it have that manifesto thing on it?
I didn't see a manifesto, and there's no commentary, so you don't even hear the guy's voice. And there's this really bizarre making of that's just someone with a camera, might be Makinoff, I don't know. Nobody addresses the fact that there's a camera there. It's not interviews. It's just somebody following the stunt coordinator around as he teaches the kids, basically, how to avoid getting run over by cars and how to effectively sell a squib. Like, don't touch it here. You're going to burn yourself. Just let it. I'm just like, what the fuck is this? It's creepy. It's almost as creepy as the movie itself.
That's kind of awesome.
Cause he's
kind of like that idea a lot.
Yeah, he's basically just telling the kids, okay, a squib works like this. If you touch it, you're going to get burned. You just want to let it explode. It's not going to hurt you if you don't touch it. And I'm just like, who's filming this? What am I watching?
That's fantastic.
Yeah, so that, again, I highly recommend this if you're the kind of person who, first of all, if you're a fan of Who Can Kill a Child, this is a no-brainer.
Which is probably a very small...
Yeah, like, if you're one of the two people listening who's seen that movie, this is a really intense, really interesting movie that, one of the things I like about it is that it plays with the idea of the fear of motherhood in a similar but not identical way to Aliens.
Okay.
Because it's about a woman addressing the fact that she, you know, in this case, very literally, is about, she's pregnant. She's about to become a mother. And everything that happens kind of puts the audience in a position to go, man, I don't know if I want to ever have kids, ever.
I was already there.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
So I highly recommend it. It's a very bizarre movie, but one I think you'll enjoy.
Fair enough.
So moving on to the next film, we're going to talk about Help!
I need somebody.
Help!
Not just anybody.
Help!
I need someone.
Help! Yeah, we're going to talk about the new Blu-ray release,
Help!
Of Help. This was a movie that I actually saw when I was a kid. I wasn't a huge fan of the Beatles. Like, I was never brought up on Beatles music.
Help.
I liked... Thank you.
This explains a lot of what's wrong with
it. I think they're a good band. I like some of their songs.
Oh, but my God. Are you a Rolling Stones guy?
I also like the Rolling Stones. I don't understand why that's mutually exclusive. You have to be
one or the other? Is there another option? I'm sorry. I thought there was one or the other.
I don't know. I'm a Tupac guy. Is that,
I want to give you a
where
music...
Where does that fall?
Yeah.
Where am I? What planet is this?
Again, I'm not saying I dislike either band. In fact, I like both of them. I'm just not the same way that I was brought up on some other music that it's like a part of me, you know?
Right.
But
John Travolta.
No, not John Travolta.
like Bruce Willis.
Like AC fucking DC. That's like the kind of music that I was brought up on. But Help is a movie that I saw as a kid and just loved.
Yay! Wait, hold on. Hold on, I have to address
Can we have a
this.
Shut the fuck up Luke button?
No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Did you just call AC/DC liking gay?
I mean, I called Brian gay.
I mean, I have no problem with gay people liking AC/DC.
You realize that has nothing to do with AC/DC. It was just an opportunity.
It also has nothing to do with homosexuality.
Oh, wait, did you mean the sense of transvestites or something like that?
No, because
AC/DC is off.
Because I would have said Prince in that case.
No, I like AC/DC just fine. I was just giving Brian shit.
So Help is a movie that stars the Beatles, but it's directed by Richard Lester, who also did...
Love Actually.
No, Hard Day's Night.
Richard Curtis.
Alien.
No, God, shush.
Blade Runner.
Richard Lester.
Superman
also,
2.
I'm done. This review is over.
But that was right, wasn't it?
Yes, okay. He was the guy brought in to replace Richard Donner on Superman 2. Congratulations.
And Superman 3.
He also did Superman 3, which is an abomination. So anyway, God damn both of you. Help is the follow-up Beatles movie where they realize that Hard Day's Night is a faux documentary, and they couldn't... The next logical step was to make a movie about their personal lives. But at that point in the Beatles' career, it was like, oh, we'll never get away with filming what they do because they were into stuff, drugs and women and whatnot.
Fucking girls.
Yeah, so it was like, we can't put that on screen. So instead, we're going to create this completely farcical situation where Ringo Starr has a ring that's the sacrificial totem of this ancient society, and anyone who wears it.
Thuggy cult.
Yes.
Yeah, where's like, Mola Ram?
You betrayed Shiva. So he's basically running from this cult that's chasing him because anyone wearing the ring is supposed to be the sacrifice. How he got the ring, not really important.
Who cares? Come on.
But it's just a series of comical situations that, to me, the way they're set up and this certain brand of absurdity that they use reminds me, it's not identical to, but it reminds me a lot of Monty Python. In fact, the way they break things up, like where there's a fake intermission that's just them standing around in speed ramp and I think it's John, like, pulling at an imaginary string and Ringo jumping like a monkey.
Yeah.
And then it's like, and now back to the movie. And it's just like,
the Beatles were really influenced by not just Monty Python, but the stuff that led up to Monty Python. That sort of
drugs.
Absurdist. Okay. Yes. You're not incorrect.
Well played, Mullen.
You're not incorrect, but the humor that came out of those drugs.
Right, yes.
That absurdist humor that was going on and was very sort of cutting edge at the time in England, as well as they've said that, like, Duck Soup by the Marx Brothers was a huge inspiration, which if you've seen that, it's like, oh, wow, I can't believe I didn't see that immediately. And they said it was also supposed to be a satire of the James Bond films.
Oh, there's a great moment where the theme music that's playing sounds so close to the James Bond theme that I'm like, you guys are gonna get sued, you realize.
But one of the things about this film was that that in retrospect, when you watch it, you go, is this the monkeys? Because the show, The Monkeys, that followed, of course, you know, I mean, I assume you have some concept out there of who the monkeys are. This was their, like, hey, what if if Help continued into a TV series?
Mm-hmm.
It very much is that.
It feels to me like a weird mix of The Monkey Show and The Banana Splits.
Kinda, yeah. But that being said, I actually like this better than A Hard Day's
Night. Thank you!
I know A Hard Day's Night is technically the better film, but Help is just so goofy fun. Hey, Beatle! I mean, there's so many things here that just make me laugh that have stuck with me over the years. It's the film that, out of all the stuff the Beatles did, and they did a bunch of movies that feels the most like they really liked each other and were really in the spirit of it, and everybody was together with it. They were just having fun.
So much great wordplay in this, just really snappy back and forth. And there's a great running bit where the Beatles... It's funny you mentioned that, because on the one hand, it's yes, you do get the sense that they all like each other and having fun, but there's a great running joke about how they're all giant dicks to each other.
Yeah, yeah.
There's this one bit where three of them get trapped in a cage, and McCartney just goes, well, I'm out, and he runs off, just full speed takes off, and then... There's the thing where Ringo's like, I can't get the ring off. People are chasing us. And the other Beatles are like, why are you being so selfish? Just cut your finger off. You're putting us in danger. Like, they just give Ringo so much shit. But in a way that's really witty and well-written. And apparently that's because of a guy named Charles Wood, who was a writer who was specifically known for being a great wordsmith and great at witty banter. And they brought him in specifically for that purpose. And I think it gives the movie its spirit. Like, the entire pulse of this movie is just sort of this repartee that everybody has in these, I'm going to say it, these puns. And, you know, all of these. There's one really weird gag where the guy from Scotland Yard calls everything famous.
Yeah.
Oh, this is the famous tavern where the famous killer. And then the Beatles start making fun of him. They're like, oh, yeah, didn't you hear? This is a famous tavern. And it's just,
it's of all the Beatles movies, it's the one that captured best what their persona was supposed to be publicly.
Sure.
Like that sort of like, hi, we're just a bunch of guys that like to make fun of everything around us. Because
we're a bunch of uncanny Beatles reference, by the way.
We're just a bunch
of voice. Yes.
Just a bunch of
Google. No.
Impression is the word I'm looking for.
There it is.
Why do I even try to do this?
I don't know.
I don't know. I mean,
you're not particularly good.
Because I'll give you shit.
Yeah.
Because
actually,
we want to hear Luke make fun of
it
you.
It is worth it.
Oh, because we're all British. Now. Mine's terrible, Liverpool. Too.
Here's my impression of Luke Mullen. Help, I'm in hell.
No, it's true, though. Seriously, somebody get me the fuck out of here.
He does have to do the show with us, so, you know, there's that.
Yeah, there's that real sense of camaraderie that's going on here. It's a lot of fun. And this new Blu-ray, it looks great. It sounds great. God, these songs are terrific. I'm sorry. I was totally a Beatles kid. And I love having these songs and watching them do. I mean, this is where Scooby-Doo got it from and the monkeys and everything else of those scenes of like, hey, there's an action scene.
Let's all run around and play music.
We're going to replay the song and have it be like, oh, it means the beginning of the music video, ultimately.
And this does have some of their best songs as sort of interludes, like Hide Your Love Boy, which is still one of my favorite songs.
Well, for the Beatles, like Help was one of their great, like right on the verge of going into the psychedelic period albums, mm-hmm. where it's like, wow, we've really mastered the pop song. Now we want to do crazy shit. And it was yeah. like the sort of the end of the pop song period.
And this is one of the most this is one of the best Blu-rays, biggest surprises in terms of transfer and quality and special features that I've come across in a long time. Because first of all, it was put out by Capitol Records.
Wow, how odd is that?
Yeah. That was really surprising to me. And then the quality of this is just so remarkably good. It's staggering in a lot of ways. And the audio, man, when that first chord of Help hits, you just feel like it's surrounding you, like you've cranked
almost
up
like your surround sound.
Well, no, you feel like you've cranked up, like you put on the vinyl and you've cranked it up, and it just, oh god, it's so rich and beautiful. I love the sound.
Yeah, it's a very well done release altogether, and I highly recommend.
And the menus are all like, there's a different song for every menu. If you go to setup, different song. You go to special features, different song. And they animate them, so when they go from one to the other, they move around. There's all these pictures. There's a booklet that has quotes from people like Martin Scorsese just talking at length about why they love this. It's
God,
incredible.
We get it. You like it, Ryan.
This is an amazing release. I can't believe how good this
is. I will say, like, with regard to the special features, there's a really interesting piece on the restoration, and it's clear that they did the restoration in, like, the late 90s or so, based on the technology, and, well, frankly, the haircuts and the clothes as well. But when we talked about, like, the Jaws Blu-ray release, and they did, like, the wet gate transfer and all that kind of stuff, they did all of that stuff for Help. And it really shows, like, how much time and effort they put into it. And it looks great.
For a movie that most people are like, well, it's no Hard Day's Night.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you can totally understand why Universal spent the money to do that on Jaws, but the fact that someone, Capitol Records maybe, spent the money to do that for Help is really impressive.
The Beatles were the greatest band in history, so...
No, totally.
Wait, did you just say that? Did you just agree with me?
Again, sure.
I mean,
no,
they're generally recognized. Like,
I win!
This is how rumors get started.
I mean, I think the Roots are the greatest band in history.
What?
But...
No, you can't backtrack now because I'll edit that out.
All right, fine.
Oh, you remind me of someone. Yeah, we'll leave that one alone. So moving on from Help, before
really?
I put my...
No,
no, it's okay.
I don't know.
Before right. I put my foot in my mouth, we're going to talk about The Rambler. And I assume the sequel is The Gambler and then The Backbiter. You can go ahead and tell them all that God's going to cut them down.
You got to know when to kill them.
Wow.
Know when to bill them. Yep. Know when to spill some blood. Know when to run.
Yay!
You got to count your proceeds.
Woo!
Even though they're probably not much.
Okay.
Because this came out at South by Southwest and nobody saw it except Luke Mullen.
No, I'm sure people saw this movie at South by.
No, actually, this is a 2013 independent. The word is psychotronic, which I suppose
Qu'est-ce
is appropriate.
I don't know. That's a word somebody came up with for the Wikipedia page. I don't know.
Probably.
That's really a thing.
I've heard that word before, but it seems like one of those, like, we got nothing else. Psychotronic! Yeah.
It's batshit insane is
directed
what
by
that means.
Calvin Reeder, who I believe had done one other film that was not generally well responded.
He did a movie called The Oregonian, which was another smaller independent title, played some festivals. And he's also acted, like, in fact, he's in VHS.
Oh, okay.
He's one of the guys, like, in the wraparound story who goes into the house looking for the VHS tape. With kind of a dirty stash.
Fair enough.
But yeah, this is from everything I understand. I haven't seen The Oregonian, but this is they're very similar films
to The Rambler.
Yeah, just as far as like style and tone.
Oh, okay.
I have not seen insaneness.
I've not seen that either. But let me just before we even start, let's just say Dermot Mulroney. This is like him wandering around through a series of quirky situations with bizarre characters, and none of this has any sort of linear sense to it. It's all goofy and nonsensical, and if right there you're not turned off yet, all right, keep listening. But if you are turned off, you're right. This is not your movie. Go away. It's not going to be for you, I promise. In fact, even otherwise, it may not be for you. But that being said, I'm going to tell you right now that I did like this film. Didn't love it, did like it. And the reason is because Dermot Mulroney wandering through this crazy world of terrible shit happening to people, of lots of gore and really disturbing situations, but all cartoonish and weird, reminded me of nothing else of like a sort of like Alex Cox. Somebody gave him the brown acid when he was making Repo Man and he made this movie instead. you know? It's like, don't
I just like the fact you said Cox and brown ass.
Sid.
Oh, brown acid. I'm sorry.
Acid.
I was selectively listening.
It's like Mexican black tar heroin.
A guy who just got out of jail. His wife, played by briefly by Natasha Lyonne.
You guys remember Natasha Lyonne from the American Pie films?
She's put on a lot of weight.
I failure will do that thing to you. For her,
she's still hot, but
okay. I'm glad we can agree on this.
Yeah, I'm just.
I can say from personal experience that failure will do that to you. You will put on weight.
But she comes to pick him up. She obviously wants nothing really to do with him. She kicks him out of the house, and he goes, "Well, I'm the Rambler." He's never known as anything but the Rambler. He goes rambling across the country, and the one repeated
just
thing
talking and talking,
is, just nattering on. That's a sequel. The Natterer.
The natterer.
He keeps running into this girl who isn't really even a name. She's just the girl played by Lindsay Pulsifer, who is, by the way, completely adorable, gorgeous, who keeps disappearing or dying on him. And then the very next moment, the next town, she's there again as another person. Yet there seems to be some sort of connection. Who is this person? Why does she keep popping up? What's going on around him? Who's this guy who he keeps seeing who has a device that he puts on people's heads that can record their dreams only to have their heads explode every time he tries it on them?
It records them to glorious VHS tape.
Yeah, I think that's a terrible side effect. That's all I'm going to say.
I was going to say that's a
fatal flaw. I will say, though, that is one of those moments. Like the first time this happens, like, you know, the Rambler like hooks up with the scientist, like picks him up on the side of the road, like hitchhiker style, and they go into this town, and you know, the Rambler's just kind of like Moroni has no real where to go. Like, he went to his brother's for a little bit and it didn't work out, and so he's just kind of rambling, you know, he's just going wherever the sun may take him. And so this first experience with the scientist, he's like, well, this is kind of an interesting idea. And so they, like, they're in, like, a warehouse somewhere in this town, and they've got, like, he's gathered, like, four people to this event, and this woman gets up there, and, you know, you're, like, you're just watching along. It's kind of like the Exploding Actresses YouTube video. You haven't seen that?
I have not
the YouTube
seen that,
video no. where random act. Well, you've seen the Disney Princesses
oh, the Disney,
one.
Okay, fair enough.
So
I was like, I thought we literally just talked about this.
No, I was like, wait, I got lost.
It's kind of like that. You know, you're just watching, you're watching, and then, oh my god, her head just exploded. What the fuck is going
and
on?
And pretty awesome and gorily.
It's yeah. Like, oh, Jesus. And like, Moroni, like, doesn't react at all. That's like, he's got, like, blood things, on his aviators.
But that's one of the things I liked about this movie so much was that he's just wandering through this insane, crazy, like David Lynch having a nightmare world of shit like that happening, and he just never reacts.
By the way, just Blood on the Aviators is my new 80s new wave band.
As well it should be.
Like, come on, that's just a song and you know it.
And I mean, I guess I haven't really come out and said it. I hate this movie.
I know
and,
you do.
And I totally disagree with Chris on it. But all that being out in the ether, I was really into this movie. Like, I was very interested. Like, there are a lot of little hints. Like, there's this weird... it's hard to describe. It's almost like a star in the sky that, like, randomly pops up over Dermot Mulroney's head.
Well, it's not even a star. It's like little, like, two.
Yeah, like little flashes of light or something.
It's like, are there aliens involved in this?
Yeah, and it happens, like, near the beginning of the film a couple of times before anything really weird has happened. And so you're kind of just like, I don't know. That was one of those things that really grabbed me and pulled me into the story, and I really wanted to see where it was going. And then, like, three quarters of the way through the movie, when I was like, you're just not going to explain anything, are you? You're just going to keep throwing shit at the screen. And I was like, all right, and fuck you, too.
And that's the thing, though, is that this is one of those films that, no, it's not going to explain all that shit to you. And sometimes that sort of thing, more often than not, that sort of thing is just fucking lame and boring. And for you, it was.
I wish it had come together more... satisfyingly. I mean, I didn't need all the answers, but I wanted at least some.
I felt like by the halfway point, I'd come to terms with the fact that they weren't going to
answer. They weren't going to give him anything. Yeah.
And that this was really just kind of a crazy cult experience type of film. And
I can totally understand why people would dig it.
And that being said, like I said, I like where his influences were. There was a lot of Alex Cox in there. There was some David Lynch in there. There was some
Jodorowsky.
Jodorowsky. There was some Cronenberg. I mean, all those things together, always having a sort of wink, wink, nudge, nudge at the audience type of thing going on. No, it does not. It's never going to make sense except for, like, you know, the conceit at the end.
Sure.
Which
gives,
like,
it a context.
Which gives it a context, but not really, like none of the stuff pays off, as it were. But that, you know, I had fun watching it all the way through, even though, yeah, it's one of those movies. If that sounds miserable to you, you're probably right. It would be. But if
you're interested at all, because I was interested for a good three quarters of the film,
Yeah, and good really good practical effects work in it.
Yeah.
And like I said, Lindsay Pulsifer plays the girl, is super hot and has some cool scenes in it.
Definitely.
So I recommend this. Luke rabidly does not.
I don't like it, but I mean, at the same time, like I always feel weird discouraging people from seeing something just because you and I, like, we both love movies and you obviously dug it. So, you know, I feel weird telling people that it's not a film where there's no redeeming value. Like, there, I can understand why people would watch this movie and get something out of it. It's just not a film that I got
it. It's a very definition of, like, guys who like to sit around and drop acid and watch movies type film. This is your movie. This is the movie you want to watch.
Definitely.
Sweet. What? I'm sorry, I heard acid.
Wake up, Brian. It's your turn.
All right. From there, we're going to move on to a little film called Phantom, which was not had nothing to do with Billy Zane in purple costumes, which immediately I was like, strike one, movie. Strike one.
Wait. Affleck, you were the bomb in Phantom, yo.
Affleck was the bomb in Phantoms.
That's a great joke.
Seriously, like, that's like the only reason that anybody remembers Jay and Silent Bob.
Yeah, honestly, that's the only thing I remember from
Jay
and Silent Bob.
Exactly. It's like, Jay and Silent Bob kind of sucked, but that line was awesome.
Yeah.
Well, this is not about superheroes who wait around in the jungle for evil to find them, which is really fucking convenient. This is based on the true story of a Russian submarine that went missing in the crucial days of the Cold War, right around, you know, the whole Cuban Missile Crisis situation, where this submarine with nuclear capacity and a nuke on board just disappeared.
Poof.
Just gone. And it made us very nervous.
Understandably.
And
the Russians very nervous. It was their submarine.
And this movie, I don't know how much of this is actual fact. I'm not going to pretend to be a historian on this. But the movie presents that what happened was there was a rogue faction of Soviet government agents who decided, or KGB agents, who decided that they were going to hijack the sub and use it to start nuclear... Well, basically, they were going to attack America because they realized that America had this... had developed this system for destroying missiles in the air before they hit, which meant that we no longer had... mutually assured destruction.
Yeah,
because it was like, we could stop it when they fired at us, so in the minds of these agents, what's to stop America from attacking us first, because they no longer have to worry about repercussion.
Now, the situation that makes us, you know, ostensibly interesting anyway, is that the captain of the ship, played by Ed Harris, who is the guy he's been doing this for a while, he's a loyal Russian citizen, but he's at the end of his career, is watching this new guy, played by David Duchovny, come in and slowly figuring out that this guy is a fucking psycho with this sort of, like, new party line. I mean, he's the Russian equivalent of, like, people like Michelle Bachmann, quite frankly. It's like, you know what I'm saying? He's like, this
guy's
like,
batshit insane.
He's batshit insane. Yeah. Like, believe this new party line. No, it's the only way. It's what
Michelle
has to
happen.
Michelle Bachmann. And he's... ends up being like, you know, the real patriot for his country of saying like, no, we're not going to I'm not going to do that. You're wrong.
It's weird. There's almost a completely reverse relationship in this film to Crimson Tide.
Yeah.
Where it's like the new person coming in is the one that's the problem. And it was, you know, the old stalwart captain who's like, I don't really want to start a war. Can we not do that, please? Right.
And the thing is, this is a fascinating setup. And the story it's ostensibly based on, I don't know the truth of the historical background.
Sure, I don't think any of us do.
Is, you know...
This could be a complete horseshit. We really don't.
I don't really know. But that being said, it's a poorly filmed movie is the biggest problem. It, for me, anyway, it never really comes together. Every time it tries to build tension, it just seems to dissolve right in front of your eyes. There's long sequences right when things should be happening that nothing is happening.
So you're talking about story execution.
Yeah.
You're not talking about the actual cinematography.
No.
Okay.
Okay, like, yeah, because like, I thought on a technical level it was pretty well shot.
Yeah, because that's
It was shot, you know, acceptably, but I didn't think at any point, wow, look at that.
On the one hand, it didn't wow me. On the other hand, I thought it was very well shot for what had to have been a fairly small budget.
Sure, and let me comment on what you said about the story. I agree with you. There was something about this movie that even though it had all of the elements of a film that I would typically enjoy, it just failed to grab me. I couldn't get behind it. And I don't know, honestly, and this is not fair to judge the movie on this, but I don't know if it's because it just struck me as too similar to Crimson Tide, or if I just couldn't latch onto the whole, it's based on, I think what really kept me at arm's length is the fact that you have, and I know this is crazy, but you have all of these American actors playing Russians which I've
And the whole movie is in English.
And the whole movie's in English with not a trace of an accent, which I know that's been done before. I get that. But when every conversation is about those dastardly Americans, and you have American actors playing Russians with no trace of an accent...
You could at least do the thing where they start off talking in Russian and with subtitles, and then
Hunt for Red October.
That transfer moment where you go, okay, the audience now goes, oh, we understand.
Yeah, that is... that in Hunt for Red October, that's done so beautifully. Yeah. I love that moment. Because, again, yeah, because you're right. You start to go, okay, well, I'm giving
Even
you credit.
Even the Star Trek moments do that. The Star Trek movies do that, right, with Klingons. They'll have that moment where they're talking in Klingon, and then the movie goes, does something cinematography-wise or something is switch-wise, where they go, okay, now for your benefit, we're not going to have you read subtitles anymore.
So right.
They're just going
to... But I think that just... kept me from being able to... I was taken out of the world of the movie every time that happened.
Yeah, agreed.
I don't give a shit. I thought it was great anyway.
but that wasn't one of my problems with it at all. I mean, I was like, right from the beginning, I was like, okay, that was a bad decision, but whatever. I think ultimately my problem was just the way this ends up playing out. I thought this came to a point by the end. I was like, are you serious? Is that really how you're going to end this film? I mean, just startled walking out of the theater. Like, that's one of the worst endings I've seen for this type of movie in maybe as long as I can remember.
But again...
I completely disagree.
Well, here's the reason I'm not willing to say
It's like a ninth season X-Files episode.
I don't think it's anywhere near that bad.
I think I know what you mean specifically, and not to spoil anything, but part of me wonders if I knew more about the true story, if I would be more accepting of that ending. I don't know. Because it's like, on a certain degree, it's like, you can't change... If they're really being accurate to the story, you can't just go, well, it ended this way in real life, but we're going to end it this way instead because it's a better ending. Because we would judge them probably pretty harshly for that as well. But I think what you're talking about specifically...
is the aesthetic
ending. Yeah, okay.
No. I mean,
I thought it was a really interesting way to do it, and I was actually pulled in by the hook and didn't realize what was happening until the end.
That did surprise me. I'll give it that.
And I really liked it. I completely disagree with Chris about the story elements. I thought there was tension throughout. I thought it was really interesting. I was on board. I was drawn in from the beginning. I was on board.
As it were.
Hi-oh, General.
Yeah.
So I was actually really impressed with what I assume is kind of a small independent film that not a lot of people have heard about, even though it has really great actors in it.
Yeah. No, I mean, it does. It does have a great cast, because we've not only got Ed Harris, David Duchovny, we've got William Fichtner.
I love William Fichtner!
He's so awesome.
Who is great, and it's got that guy
who... He's the only really great thing about Lone Ranger, if you ask me.
Oh, is he in Lone Ranger?
He's the villain.
No shit?
Yeah, you can't recognize
him. Kind of more excited for Lone Ranger.
Yeah. And then it's got Lance Henriksen as sort of the old general who sends Ed Harris out on his last mission.
Oh, right, yeah.
So he has just this great little moment. It's a very short moment, but I really liked it.
Yeah, and punctuated by he's not going to appear in any more scenes in this
movie. Yeah, it was kind of a one-shot character, so, but I really liked it.
It really is. I don't know. I thought this was one of those completely forgettable films for me. I was like, wow, saw it, just left the theater, got to my car, went, wait, what did I just see? Type of movies.
I thought it was okay. Luke really liked it. So yeah, make your own conclusion.
The gamut of the opinions.
The gamut.
And we're going to wrap up this episode with a little film called North Face.
And did either one of you guys see North Face?
No, I did not.
Oh, I'm so disappointed because North Face is amazing.
Is this just about the skin condition of the guy from Sex and the City?
No, I don't know.
That'd be No Face. I'm sorry.
Really?
Yep.
You made a Chris.
I haven't seen the movie. What do you want from me?
You didn't even pronounce Noth right.
I'm pretty sure it's Noth.
Noth?
Noth?
Chris Noth?
N-O-T-H?
Yeah.
Noth?
As in Noth.
Chris Noth?
We'll look it up.
All right.
We'll look it up.
Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
This is a weird thing to argue about, considering he's not in this movie.
Now look, in season 5, when
Carrie gets her 37th pair of Manolo Blahniks.
Wait.
Tell us about North Face, Chris.
North Face is...
What was that noise? That squirm noise was amazing.
There was this little moment that I was like, I kind of want to talk about Sex and the City.
Don't we all? quick show of hands, and by hands I mean verbal response. Don't we all love Sex and the City?
Yes.
The series.
Yeah, the series. Yes.
Yeah,
fuck the movies, but yeah, great. I love the series.
Okay. We can argue about the movies
and
later.
I'll admit I'm a fan of girls.
Because I really like
I'm
the first
a fan
movie.
Of girls, too, which is like
well,
Sex and the City
Well, we're all fans
junior.
Of girls, Chris.
I love girls.
Oh, you mean the
show? I don't
show.
Even know what I think about girls. I can't give you an opinion.
Please tell me somebody
girls.
Will remix that. I don't even know what I think about girls.
No, seriously. Like, I keep watching that show just it's so that I can talk about Luke. It, but Hallelujah. I have no idea what my opinion is of that show.
I really
I love
like
that
it.
all of this is from this discussion of a movie that only Chris has seen.
Yeah, that is about Nazis.
Yeah, about
climbing
two Germans
the
climbing the Alps.
Not just Germans, actual Nazis. Climbing the Alps, based
Germans.
On her, and by the way,
tell us, Scott Beggs.
And by the way, they're the heroes.
Of course they are. Is this a Leni Riefenstahl film?
No.
Wow. Hi-o, Riefenstahl
nice reference.
Jesus Christ.
We've just lost all semblance
between
of the show.
Between Who Can
show
Kill a Child
point.
And Riefenstahl references.
I'm so happy with this show.
We're both the classiest and the worst possible podcast on the internet.
Look, the whiskey was a good idea.
Great idea.
Triumph of the dick over here. this is a 2008 film, which I
Bullshit.
Believe Riefenstahl was dead by then. Directed by Philip Stotzel, or however you say it. I don't know. It's got a umlaut, so I have no fucking clue because I'm a really pathetic white guy.
Umlaut is usually what I say right before I throw up.
Which was based on a 1936 attempt to climb the Eiger North Face. Yes, the same mountain from that.
The Eiger Sanction.
Mm-hmm. But the North Face is the famous, like, unclimbable death face. Like people climb the mountain, but not that way.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard. Considered to be one of the most dangerous rock faces in the world. And it was that point where the Germans were really trying to prove they were the greatest race in the world. One of those times. And the Nazis are just coming into power, and they basically, like, two soldiers who are Nazis, but just weren't into it. They were just like, well, you kind of have to become a Nazi if you're in a big city at that point, you know, mm-hmm. a young guy. I guess it wasn't at the point where you couldn't quit because they quit to go, like, climb this mountain, but then are, like, the Nazis going, yes, there are people, where there's this big contest. Like, whoever climbs it first gets to be the guy who climbed it first, and all these different countries send people, but ultimately it ends up being between them and just two other climbers from another country. And you know, it's funny, this sounds like that sort of thing, like, okay, whatever, but what makes this fucking film work like crazy is that there's this great relationship between them, a mutual childhood friend who's just trying to be a reporter in Berlin. So she's been brought in. She has no experience, but she's been brought in because she knows these guys, and she has kind of a love, hasn't gotten started with one of these guys. And then astonishing cinematography of this mountain. Just like all these scenes that are like, oh, Jesus Christ! As they're trying to climb this impossible face, it just, by the way it's filmed, just makes you, like, sit straight upright, like, oh, fuck! And you forget constantly that they're Nazis. Like, if Indiana Jones was the one who cut their rope, you'd go, like, yay! But it's not. And so it's just guys trying to climb a mountain. And the funny thing is, like, ultimately, this is about the hubris of the German race at that point, of, like, the Germans going, like, yes, we're the greatest people in the world. I mean, the subtext is totally, like, yeah, you're not going to fucking do it. You know, that you're trying to climb the impossible and prove you're better than anybody else. And what you're going to come back to is having to understand that you're just as human as the next guy.
Mm-hmm.
But you can take that out of it entirely. You can forget that these guys are Nazis and just watch this as, like, a human, you know, like, striving for greatness, but then having to come to terms with the fact, like, is if you have a choice between being great or doing the right thing. Doing the right thing is the right decision, even if it doesn't always work out.
Since they're actually Germans, if we enjoyed watching them fall, would we still be able to call it Schadenfreude, or would we just have to call it Failjoy?
I like it.
Failjoy is what it's translated.
This was actually a huge hit in Germany, which, like I said, if you see this, I mean, it's one of those things where you go, it's not, it really isn't about Germans succeeding. So don't take it that way.
It's like every other movie in World War II.
It's like halfway through the film, it becomes clear these guys are not going to make it to the top.
They're not going to see the top of the mountain. Not see the, okay. The hate looks that I'm getting right now.
I just didn't get it.
Yeah, it took
not
me a second.
Yeah, they're going to not see.
It was a bit of a stretch. Yeah.
Oh.
Explain more of your jokes, Brian.
Beer!
Punton.
Jesus Christ, pun. Beer. Both. Give to
Disturbing.
Me.
Disturbing. But yes, this had lots of kudos and well-deserved. It's a beautiful film. Get over the fact they're Nazis. It's really distressing to watch not in a that's gross sort of way, but like you actually find yourself really caring about these people who are good people doing this thing. Yes, they're Nazis, but only by association. Early Nazis.
Early
pre-killing Jew Nazis.
They were Nazis before it was cool.
Yeah, they were.
They're just Nazi hipsters.
I actually really, really, really recommend the fuck out of this film. I loved it. Keeping it in my collection. I'll probably go back and watch it again. There's a lot of films out there that are like, the dangerous mountain climbing films that have come out, especially in the last couple of years.
Like Cliffhanger.
Like Vertical Limit.
No. What was the one that was just like a year ago or so? There was one that was like really popular.
Was it not a documentary, but an actual like fictionalized movie? Is your brain? Are you going to make the squirm sound again?
His head just exploded, ladies and gentlemen. That's what happens when Chris thinks too hard.
I don't remember. But anyway, this is of all the great films that have come out, this might be one of them.
Good, stellar praise,
ringing endorsement,
stellar praise, and that's going to bring us to the end of this segment, episode, whatever.
Thank God.
Of digital noise. It's time to turn down the digital noise, is what I'm trying to say.
Adjust your tracking controls, ladies and gentlemen. Chris is not as drunk as he might appear.
Indeed. Remember, guys, to like us on Facebook, facebook.com/oneofusnet. We have our own Twitter feed for this show at DigiNoiseCast, where you can go to leave us all the questions that we'll be taking in the future for future episodes. Tweet us questions to that account. Again,
Twitter questions.
Again, that's at DigiNoiseCast. So go ahead and tweet your questions to that account all the time. We'll just pick them at random, whatever we want. And
I like that.
If you liked anything we talked about here on the show, please do consider buying it via our page, because if you buy it through Amazon via a link that we put up, that helps support the site. We really appreciate it.
You're not paying more by doing it through there, but you're giving us a kickback.
Yeah.
So we really appreciate it.
Definitely. And in lieu of a standard giveaway, this is kind of exciting. All this week, we're going to be giving away one new item every single day on our main page. So keep your eyes peeled for details on that and how to win. Who knows what it could be? It could be something great. It could be something only you would like. And then it's like, hey, awesome, I'm the only one entering.
Win
Luke Mullen's beard.
How many times have I told you guys that we can't sell me?
You have said that a lot.
Is that technically true, though?
I'm not a 14-year-old girl, and this isn't Mexico. Oh.
That's true. Both of those things are true.
We could relocate, although that would not make him a 14-year-old girl.
That's true.
You'd be surprised.
Well, that's going to do it. Until next time on Digital Noise, I just want to let you know that if it seems like we're a little off, I learned it from watching Blues.
I approve.
Thank you.